Hello and welcome to this episode of the 21cc podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Institute of Building. I'm Nadine Badu, editor of CM People.
And I'm Justin Stanton, editor of CM Digital.
Today we're discussing the recent changes to immigration legislation and the new rules for UK visas. Later in the episode, we'll be joined by solicitor Kirsty Moore from law firm Fragerman, who will talk us through the potential legal risks for construction employers, as well as some top tips to ensure businesses remain compliant. Justin, what are the recent immigration changes?
Well, the government published an immigration white paper in May this year. It then issued a statement of changes on the 1st of July, which announced the reforms that came into force on the 22nd of July. There are circa 40 individual reforms in total, but a handful of key reforms likely to have the greatest impact on construction are the increase of the salary thresholds for both current visa holders and for new applicants under the skilled worker route, the increase in the skill threshold from RQF level 3, i.e. A level, to level 6, graduate level, removing around 180 occupations from eligibility. The immigration salary list will be expanded on the recommendation of the Migration Advisory Committee to include some lower level roles, RQF 3 to 5, in shortage. And in the long term, that list will be replaced by a new temporary shortage list. Construction roles such as bricklayers, integrity pipe welders, roofers, carpenters, and retrofitters will continue to be included. The third paragraph of the government's announcement emphasises the importance of the temporary shortage list. A quote, "The introduction of an interim, time-limited and conditional temporary shortage list will make sure the immigration system works better for the UK, with international recruitment only providing support where occupations are key to the industrial strategy or building crucial infrastructure." The fourth para of that announcement is a warning. Each sector must have a workforce strategy in place to train UK workers, or it will lose access to the immigration system. Further changes can be expected later in the year, specifically a rise in the immigration skills charge and an uplift of the language requirements across the immigration system.
So why have these changes come about?
According to the government, the changes, I quote, "restore order to the points-based system, focusing on higher skills, lower numbers and tighter controls. They are an important step in ending the UK's reliance on overseas lower skilled recruitment." In announcing the reforms, the Home Secretary and the Prime Minister were keen to point out the massive spike in net migration under the previous administration. Indeed, the white paper states the net migration mushroomed from 224,000 in the year to June 2019 to 906,000 in the year to June 2023. Although, should be pointed out, that figure more than halved in the calendar year of 2024. The PM's intro to the white paper reads, "Migration is part of Britain's national story and an essential element of a strong economy. But if people want to come to Britain to start a new life, they must contribute, learn our language and integrate. And if employers want to bring workers from overseas, then they must also invest in the skills of workers already in Britain. We will still be competitive in attracting the world's best talent. At the same time, we will wean our national economy off its reliance on cheap labour from overseas. The end result will be a reformed immigration system that no longer ignores the millions of people who want the opportunity to train and contribute, and that backs our young people with the hope of good, well-paid jobs in their community."
And all this is happening as the industry is facing a chronic skill shortage, right?
That's right. And you're right to use the word chronic. Can anyone point to a time in recent memory when the industry didn't have a skills shortage? But seriously, the CITB estimates that the construction industry needs to recruit the equivalent of 239,300 extra workers over the next 5 years. There appears to be some joined up thinking going on within government, at least at a high level, with the launch in late June of a new skills body, the Construction Skills Mission Board. It's co-chaired by Construction Leadership Council co-chair Mark Reynolds. The board has pledged to recruit 100,000 more construction workers annually, and it's backed by £625 million of government investment in construction skills. However, some critics of the new immigration rules suggest that the changes will disproportionately impact the vast numbers of SMEs that make up the construction supply chain, increasing administrative burdens and exacerbating the skills shortages they are already experiencing, and thus jeopardizing any chance of the government reaching its increasingly optimistic target of 1.5 million homes.
Justin, thanks so much for providing that context. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Kirsty Moore is joining the podcast today to help break down the legal implications and explain what construction employers need to know now. Kirsty is a manager and solicitor at global law firm Fragerman, specialising in UK immigration law. She works with companies in the construction sector, helping them to navigate the UK's immigration rules to hire overseas workers and maintain compliance. Hi, Kirsty. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. So can you explain how the new rules will really affect existing sponsored workers in construction? And will construction businesses still be able to sponsor overseas workers?
Yeah, so let's start with existing sponsored workers. I guess the biggest impact for them is going to be the increase in the salary threshold. So when they come to extend their visas or when they come to apply for settlement, they will need to be paid more. And that can be anything from kind of 8 to 20% more than the previous threshold, depending on their role. So, you know, less of an issue for businesses who were already paying kind of well above the threshold. But the reality is that that previous threshold was already at the kind of top end of what a lot of businesses in construction are able to offer. And so they would be needing to look at whether they can give salary increases. And if they can, that's obviously great news for existing sponsored workers. But there's an obvious commercial impact there and cost to businesses. And in many cases, it's not commercially viable to increase salaries. There's a knock-on effect. You know, you can't sometimes just increase one or two salaries. You know, then there's an effect on other bands within the business. And so I work with kind of small construction companies who may not be able to afford a salary increase, and then also very large companies who can't offer salary increases because of the wider implications. And so those businesses are, you know, unfortunately already having to have kind of very difficult conversations with their existing sponsored workers about the likelihood of being able to sponsor their visas going forward when they do need an extension. I guess the other thing to mention is the increase to the skills threshold. So for existing sponsored workers, they're pretty much okay if they're already working in an RQF level 3 to 5, so that kind of mid-skill level role before the 22nd of July, they can keep extending in those roles. So no impact there. And then one of the most more significant proposals that came out of the white paper was this proposal to extend the period that workers would need to be in the UK before they could apply for settlement. So it's currently 5 years and that would be extended to 10 years. And obviously that has been a real source of anxiety for existing sponsored workers, and there wasn't actually any detail given about that in the statement of changes in July. So no, that hasn't been implemented yet. We also haven't been given any detail about whether or not that will apply to existing skilled workers, or whether that will apply to those coming after the change takes effect. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. And then in terms of sponsorship of new overseas workers, the rule changes have definitely made that more complicated. And I think businesses will struggle now really to get a simple yes or no if they're looking to assess whether a role is eligible or if they're talking to an immigration advisor, because it depends on so many factors now. It depends on exactly what the role is, and then whether that role is on the temporary shortage list, whether it's on the immigration salary list. It depends on when the individual came to the UK when they were first sponsored as a skilled worker, and so kind of making that assessment is more complicated. It needs to be done really carefully, and then obviously you need to work out what the salary threshold is that applies for that role and whether you're going to meet that minimum. But in general, the answer is yes, there is still that ability to sponsor overseas workers. Most of those RQF level 3 to 5 roles that were eligible before still are eligible because they're either on the immigration salary list or they're on the temporary shortage list. There is the kind of new restriction that will apply to those roles, which is which means that workers coming to the UK to start those roles from the 22nd of July wouldn't be able to bring dependents with them. So although sponsorship is still possible in those roles, potentially it means that, you know, businesses may struggle to make those as attractive, those offers of sponsorship as attractive as they were before. And I think, you know, we'll see applicants having to think very carefully about whether the UK is the right place to come if they're going to have to leave their family behind to accept that role. And then longer term, whilst we have these roles still available now, we know that the Home Office plans to essentially scrap the immigration salary list and the temporary shortage list by the end of 2026. So it's a temporary measure that they are still available and that we can still sponsor in those roles. So I guess kind of longer term, you know, what happens after the end of 2026? It should be that if sectors can demonstrate that there are genuine shortages in particular roles, and if those are key sectors like the construction sector, then those roles may remain eligible beyond the end of 2026. And that will be really that will be fed into by the Migration Advisory Committee. So Migration Advisory Committee is otherwise called the MAC, an independent body that the Home Office has asked to review shortages in the UK. And they'll be likely going out to businesses or sectors to ask for evidence of, you know, where they struggle to recruit and what kind of impacts that has on businesses, but also evidence of their wider workforce strategy. So how the sector is kind of actively working to increase the pipeline of domestic talent. So yeah, it's kind of a watch that space in terms of how long businesses will be able to carry on sponsoring overseas workers.
And so what are some of the legal risks for construction employers if they inadvertently break the rules and they employ someone who no longer has the right to work in the UK?
So there are a few ways that businesses can fall foul of the rules and find themselves in hot water. And construction employers need to be, I guess, particularly alive to those kind of pitfalls, given that we know the Home Office is particularly concerned about compliance within this sector. And there are two buckets, really. So one is sponsors, so companies that hold a sponsor license, and then just generally all employers, regardless of whether they have a sponsor license or not. So for sponsors, the risks of kind of not complying with the rules vary depending on the severity of the breach. So if, for example, they're not paying the salary that they should be paying because they're paying less, or as is often the case with construction businesses, the worker is working more hours than they should be. So if they're not paying the required salary, then that would normally lead to the revocation of the company's sponsor license, which is hugely impactful. It would mean that all of their sponsored workers' visas would be cancelled, and it would mean that the business wouldn't be able to sponsor anybody in future. And then there are kind of less severe compliance breaches for sponsors. So, you know, perhaps they've failed to report some changes to the Home Office within the given time frame, and in those cases the kind of the risks associated are less severe. So maybe no action is taken, or the Home Office could give them perhaps an action plan setting out, you know, recommendations to improve their compliance. And then the second bucket everybody's in, so all employers are required to verify an employee's right to work before they start. And if an employee is working for you without the right to work, then that would usually lead to a civil penalty of up to £60,000 per illegal worker. And on the kind of other end of that scale, there are obviously cases as well where employers knowingly employ an illegal worker, or you know, had reasonable cause to believe that a worker doesn't have the right to work, and that's actually a criminal offence. So that can come with an unlimited fine and or up to 5 years imprisonment. So really, really, you know, potentially very serious legal risks when it comes to illegal working. This is also all published. So reputational damage is another kind of serious factor to consider.
And you touched on this earlier, but obviously the government is particularly concerned about abuses in the construction industry. So, you know, why is the government particularly concerned about construction, and what can we as an industry do to help combat that?
Yeah, well, we know that Labour has kind of made a lot of promises about tackling illegal migration. So we hear a lot about the small boats, but another part of what they're focusing on is tackling illegal working. So, you know, those who are already in the UK but don't have the right to work. Since Labour was elected, there has been a 51% rise in arrests for illegal working, and construction sites are targeted because, unfortunately, all too often they do have people there who don't have the right permission. So recently, 36 arrests were made on one construction site in Belfast, and the Home Office kind of very publicly said that they are continuing to ramp up their focus on sectors like construction for these kinds of reasons. So what can employers do? Well, I think firstly, if they're a sponsor, if they hold a sponsor license, they should be really familiar with their compliance obligations, which includes things like reporting changes to employment details, making sure they keep specific documents and information on file. I've worked with companies actually that have kind of applied for a sponsor license and then later on realised they needed to appoint somebody specifically to be responsible for maintaining these compliance obligations, because it can, you know, administratively be a lot of work. And so it's really important that at that kind of stage of applying for a sponsor license that you identify, well, who in the company is going to be responsible for maintaining this, because it is quite onerous, all of the compliance duties that a sponsor has. Obviously, they also need to be aware of what the visa requirements are at the time they sponsor somebody, and make sure that they continue to meet them, because as I said, if they, you know, find that they're not paying the right salary, or the hours are 50 hours instead of the 37 and a half that they said they would be, then the repercussions can be quite serious. And the Home Office checks salaries with HMRC, so that's kind of how that could be picked up. The Home Office also conducts audits of sponsors, so they can kind of come announced or unannounced, and they would check things, that they would check employee files, and they would check things like salaries. And so there are mechanisms for them to identify those sorts of breaches. First and foremost, though, I think, you know, what's really important is that all employers are aware of their duty to prevent illegal working. So they must be conducting a right to work check on every worker before they start work. And, you know, completing that check would take maybe 10 minutes. It's often online, but it protects the business then from liability. So if they do inadvertently hire an illegal worker, you know, maybe because they've got fraudulent documents, if they've conducted that check, they're not going to be held liable for that. Another kind of common employment setup in the construction sector specifically is contractors. So, you know, on a construction site, a lot of those workers, they're not going to be employees, they're going to be contractors. And it's not it mandatory to complete a right to work check for a contractor, but there are still good reasons to do that, and it's advised by the Home Office that you still do complete that check even for a contractor. And again, that was to avoid things like, although you may not be held liable in terms of the civil penalty, there is still that disruption to business operations. There is still that potential reputational damage if you've got kind of workers being arrested on site. So that's, you know, one crucial and quite simple way to kind of improve compliance within the sector and reduce the likelihood of any of those penalties coming your way.
So have you got kind of four key takeaways or steps that business can be taking right now to make sure that they don't fall foul of any of these new rules?
Yeah, I mean, so with the rule changes, I would say the first thing is to make sure that they are being communicated to kind of key stakeholders within the business. So recruitment managers are aware well in advance of which roles they can still sponsor for. There may be a couple that they can't, and what the salary requirement will need to, what the salary will need to be. And also things like if there's going to be restrictions on dependents for those roles, they need to know all of that so that they can plan ahead and kind of really think about whether that's a viable option for them going forwards. The second thing is, I guess, doing some forecasting and some planning ahead in respect to the workers that are already sponsored. So looking at whether they're going to need an extension, when that extension is going to be needed, and what the salary requirement will need to be at that time, and then obviously thinking about getting ahead of that and implementing the salary increase if possible before then. And obviously, if it's the case that, you know, it's not going to be achievable, then having those conversations as early as possible to allow sponsored workers to start thinking about making plans. And then I talked a bit about the Migration Advisory Committee and what they're going to be looking at. So I'd really recommend that businesses start thinking about their workforce strategy, because we know this is going to be really important in retaining access to those kind of lower mid-skilled roles. The business will need to really present evidence and data. So think about who's applying to those roles that are critical to the business, and also thinking about how you can demonstrate your commitment to upskilling the resident workforce. So the other thing I would suggest is thinking about which kind of sector groups you could collaborate with, because kind of responses from bodies that represent many businesses can be quite powerful. So looking to kind of link in with sector groups to collate that data and present it as a whole would be quite impactful when it does come to the MAC review. And then lastly, probably made the point, but carrying out right to work checks, and if your company is a sponsor, making sure that you're really staying on top of those sponsor obligations, maintaining good practice, having, you know, solid procedures in place that help you stay compliant, and that will obviously help protect your business, but really help protect the reputation of the sector overall.
That's great, Kirsty. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. I'm sure we'll speak again in the months ahead.
Thanks very much for having me.
If you would like to share your feedback on the podcast, you can email us at 21cc@atompublishing.co.uk. And if you're on social media, please use the hashtag 21cc to let us know what you think. That's all from me today. Thanks for listening.